We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Pod Maverick After Dark. It is 10:35 on Friday, April 26th. You're joining me, Kirk Henderson, editor-in-chief of MavsMoneyball.com. I am joined, as always, nearly always, Josh Bowe, fellow editor. Josh, how are you doing after that really fucking awesome 101-90 Dallas Mavericks win?
I'm doing good, and I'm flabbergasted at what we're seeing, not necessarily because I'm not really shocked because they're doing what they've been doing for about 2 months now, but like, do you remember 12 months ago when we were doing probably podcast right around this time, 12 months ago, and we were talking about how slow and unathletic and small this Mavericks team was? They got no steals. They got no blocks. Basically, every type of stat related to athleticism. They were in the bottom third of the league. Now, they're big. They're strong. They're fast. And they rack up steals and blocks like nobody's business. And it's one of the most remarkable turnarounds I've seen from this team within this amount of time. Like, I cannot believe they pulled this off this fast.
This is awesome. Yeah. This is like, I really got no other way around it. And you know, there's so many different places we could start. And I think I'm going to start with probably the most lasting element of this game, even though when you describe playoff runs in later years, you often remember moments. Like tonight, I'm wearing my Deshaun Stevenson shirt. Okay. The Sean Stevenson three goggles was a moment. Tonight, Tim McMahon just got a quote from PJ Washington. He says, PJ Washington told me that Terrence Mann was, quote, mad that I was looking at their bench. So I decided to look at it again. And on holding the pose, Washington said, I wanted to get my flicks right for after the game. When I walked through the door of my house tonight, because I was watching the game with some friends out, my wife described it as watching PJ Washington become a folk hero for the Dallas Mavericks. Yes,
that's that was in my brain too. That like folk hero was in my brain.
It sounds hokey because we're cynical, both of us, you and me. But this is just the time of year and the whole point of watching sports where you watch things grow. And Washington certainly wasn't alone in his heroics tonight. You know, we have three or four fans rightfully in the chat right now kind of correctly losing their minds about Josh Green, who we will get to. But the PJ Washington of it all, the physicality and the Dallas Mavericks getting punched and punching back and coming out ahead in a game where that was just dominated by physicality is something that I'm going to have to really wrap my mind around in the best way possible. Keep in mind, it's just, look, like, we've watched these Dallas Mavericks teams for how long? We never, like, I became a Dirk fan in 98. That's what drew me to the Mavericks. There have been 3 to 4 teams that I would really consider truly physical. And this one is the most physical. And right now I'm just kind of in awe of what I watched. And I don't even know how to kind of talk about this game. Can you try to walk us through, you know, the various steps within this game?
Yeah, I mean, the Clippers look old and slow and the Mavericks are big and fast is the summation. I mean, just look at the steal block totals. That tells you the story. The Clippers had 5 steals and 4 blocks. The Mavericks had 12 steals and 7 blocks. They're just manhandling this team. And the size advantage is, you feel it throughout the entire game. And the big thing with the Clippers is that, you know, I guess it was talked about, but we really probably should have hammered this more. They don't play a power forward anymore. Like, they play one big, either Zubats or Plumlee, and then they play basically maybe 2 guards and 2 forwards. And one of the two forwards are basically almost always Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. They don't have a backup forward besides Amir Coffey, maybe, and he doesn't play a ton. He had 0 points in 18 minutes. Their big bench guys are Plumlee, a big, Westbrook, and Powell, and those are bigs and guards. Like, when this Clippers team, a couple years ago, when the Mavericks played against them, they had Marcus Morris, they had Nicholas Batum, they had big forwards that could play the 4 and give Kawhi and Paul George a break, because the 4-man does so much dirty work in the modern NBA now. I mean, the 4-man always did a lot of dirty work, even when teams used to play like 6'10 power forwards, like Drew Gooden, like back in the day. But even more so now, because of the versatility that you need out of your 4-man. Like, they not only need to do the dirty work, but they need to, like, you know, have some skill. And Paul George and Kawhi Leonard can do that. Like, they can play the 4 for stretches. But the Clippers basically ask them to play that for an entire game. And the Mavericks are always playing Lively, Gafford, with EJ or Maxey. Like, there were some possessions where even PJ went on the floor. Like, they had Lively and Maxey. And that's significantly bigger than the Clippers. Mm-hmm. Like, there's never a moment when the Mavericks don't have the size advantage. And when the Clippers go small, like, the Mavericks can still go small and match Clippers small ball with Maxey at the 5, but PJ at the 4, Maxey at the 5 is still bigger than the Clippers small ball. Like, there's just no way for the Clippers to scheme around the size. And it's evident, like, it just wears down over 48 minutes. And I feel like that was what happened tonight. And it's what's happened really this series, even game 1, which the Clippers, you know, won pretty handedly. Like, I still felt like the Mavericks did, like, some okay.
So let me ask you this. So I'm watching, keep in mind, like, when I normally watch games, guys, I'm, like, by myself in the lab taking notes like a psychopath. Tonight I was out with some of my high school friends, and you're watching this game, and the Mavericks in the first quarter played smash mouth basketball with so many paint attempts and dunks in that first half. Josh, can you explain to me, I'm pretty sure I know why, but can you explain to me what the hell was happening to where the Mavericks were able to get so many paint attempts after really not getting any for 2 games?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. I think it's one, I think the Mavericks and Luka did a better job of stringing out Zubats, mm-hmm. And getting him out of position. And then if Zubats is playing up in the pick and roll or switching, that means he's not by the rim, and that means the Clippers have 4 smaller guys on the back line. So I thought they did a better job of bringing Zubats out, and then Luka, either if he'd switched or played on the ball in the pick and roll, I thought he did a good job getting around him. And once Luka gets around him, there's no, you know, it's like Paul George does a pretty good job as a help defender at the rim, but, like, who'd you rather shoot against, Zubats or George? especially with these centers. So I thought that was one thing that the Mavericks did a lot better. I thought they strung Zubats out to the perimeter, and then they got around him and they attacked the smaller front line as the Clippers tried to help. Mm-hmm. Second thing, Ty Lue kind of abandoned the defensive strategy that we've talked about with guarding Luka and Kyrie one-on-one, take away the role players and see if the Mavericks can outscore you with two guys. They started sending two of the ball on Luka pretty early into the game. I think Luka hit a couple of threes in the first half. And it's like that spooked him. And like Luka still only finished like 3 of 11 from three. So I don't know why he did that. But as soon as the Clippers started putting two on the ball in the pick and roll, started playing more conservative drop coverage. I mean, it was what, Lob City? Like it was curtains. Like they were toast. Like, I think both of me and you both agree on this. Like the way to cut the Mavericks off, like make Luka score. Like when Luka's a passer, the Mavericks feel unbeatable. And there was too often in the first half where the Clippers were letting Luka be a passer. And credit to Luka, his pass, like he had some bad turnovers, but his passes were on point for the most part all night.
Sorry, I muted myself stupidly. I'm just staring in awe at some of the PJ stuff, which I think we're going to get to eventually. So the Mavericks round out the first half, and there was some chicanery. Russell Westbrook got a flagrant one attempt for hitting Josh Green in the head going for a layup or for a dunk. And it was not like contact to the head before you get the ball is almost always a flagrant one in NBA situations now. Westbrook did not mean to clip him like that. But Josh Green pops up. It causes a little bit of a fracas, or whatever we want to call it. All sorts of different names you could call basketball fights. And the Mavericks walk into halftime with a double-digit lead because they flat-out pummeled the Clippers. The Clippers looked tight. Their threes were not necessarily falling. And then we get to the third quarter where the Mavericks extended their lead at one point, I think by as many as 18.
Yep.
And then what happened? Because I think I know what happened because I'm watching it at the bar. My memory is telling me that the Mavericks got a little shot happy and just couldn't connect while the Clippers made namely Amir Coffey connected on just enough threes to make it feel a little during the third. Is that fair?
Yeah, and the Mavericks defense is going to give you – they're going to give you some threes. Like, that's built into the scheme at this point. Like, their goal is to wall off the rim, wall off the paint. We'll give you some threes. They're going to try to make the right person shoot the threes if they're going to give you some threes. And you look at what Russell Westbrook did. He was 0 for 7, mm-hmm. 0 for 4 from 3. That was not an accident. I mean, they were very much shading it so that he was the one who would end up with the ball with their help scheme. But, yeah, so they gave up some threes because that's going to happen. You weather the storm. I thought Luka's defense, that was maybe the only stretch of the game where I thought Luka's defense waned a little bit. Maybe he was tired. I mean, he's played a lot of minutes and he kind of hurt his knee earlier in the first half. So like, I'm not killing him. Like he's played pretty good defense for most of the series and he played good defense tonight. He just had a little stretch there where he just got away from him and the Clippers were kind of getting by him. And then offensively, yeah, they got a little stagnant ISO ball again. When the Clippers don't send two on Luka and they guard him straight up one-on-one switch, like the Mavericks offense does not look as good. And they got back to that a little bit. And then of course, like, you know, things change and Kyrie starts going off. But the one thing that's tough is, you know, you want to play those guys one-on-one to cut off the role players. But when you're down, that's a tough strategy to employ. Like they kind of got away from it in the first half and they had such a big deficit. It's like, okay, you want to let Kyrie score a bunch of points when you're down, you know, 15, 13 points. Like that's really tough to do. So I thought Kyrie, I think what he scored, I think they got it down to 8.
Uh-huh.
I think Kyrie scored 7 points in a row and yep. He had only made one shot to that point. That almost to me, like there's a lot of heroes of this game and moments of this game that you could say won them the game. Me personally, that felt like that what
one of them was a three, right?
Yeah.
And it was one of those
and like, an and one. He had a three, an and one, and then another two-pointer.
It was just the sort of back-breaking shot moment, like that the Dallas hasn't had while Luka's been part of the Mavericks. And obviously a special shot maker like Kyrie is one in a gajillion. But that's why you get the second star. for opportunities like that. That was really special to watch with a group of people. I remember in the fourth quarter too, Kyrie hit one of those pull up in transition threes that just make you like, if you're watching it and you don't know enough about Kyrie's efficiency, you think it's a horrible shot until you watch it splash down. And then it's just a reminder to people that, and I'm pretty sure this is correct, so don't totally quote me on it, but I'm pretty sure Kyrie is quite literally the best pull up, like the best transition jump shooter in the league this season in terms of efficiency. He just makes a lot of these.
That's like his shot, man. Like that's almost like his signature shot to me. Mm-hmm. Like besides some of his crazy shots that he makes in the paint, which he had a bunch of those in the second half as well. I mean, what did he do? I think he was 7. I'm just going to refresh it here because we've got the box score loaded up. I'm pretty sure he was 7 of 12. Yeah, 7 of 12, 19 points in the second half. I mean, that was, I mean, it was huge. I mean, the Mavericks actually didn't shoot that. They shot 39% in the second half. And Kyrie, like, so that was, Kyrie basically scored, you know, all their points for the most part. Because Luka's shot didn't look great down the stretch, but he was still orchestrating. Like, I don't think this was, like, Luka didn't shoot well, but he still had a massive impact on the game and was able to, like, dictate it. And honestly, like, we've been saying this for a while, like, Luka can get away with some of these bad shooting games if he's giving it on the other end of the floor. And, like, games 2 and 3, like, he's passed the report card with flying colors in terms of defense. Like, he's been... He's been doing his part, so you know,
really
well. Maverick stars are outplaying the Clipper stars pretty handily, I think, through this series. And that
fourth quarter, then the fourth quarter rolls around, and I'm sorry, Josh and I don't always take you through games like this, but this is just sort of the way that I want to process this as we're thinking about it. The Clippers at the end of the third had at one point made it a pretty. It was like. They were just hanging around. They got within 6 points with a minute 53 left. It was 62-68. Daniel Gafford makes a layup off Kyrie. So the Mavericks headed into the fourth quarter with an 11-point lead. And it felt good, but at the same time, these are still the Clippers who have broken the Mavericks' hearts repeatedly. The Mavericks get up by almost 17 points. There's 18 points. And then I'm trying to – shoot, they're darn near getting ready to go up by 20 – and then Russell Westbrook just sort of loses his mind. I mean, it was
building. It was like, it was culminating.
Cause he had really like, if we're being honest, he had been in Luka's head in the first half a little bit. He was bothering Luka. There was a Luka tried to sell a little bit of contact. I mean, he did get bowled over by Westbrook on a corner three, but he didn't get hit in the head the way Luka acted like he was shot selling that con. So there's just a lot of like chatter, and these are two hyper, hyper competitive individuals. And I want people to understand something. Luka Doncic is listed at 6'7", 240 pounds. I weigh 240 pounds. Okay. I'm 6'2". You will never convince me Luka Doncic weighs 240 pounds. This is not a comment on his weight for what we're talking about. Westbrook fouls Luka so hard, he nearly throws him. And then proceeds to look at the ref like, what did you mean? And he shoves Luka with the off arm. PJ Washington comes up from behind and gently, I mean, he still went at Westbrook, but just gives him a little, hey, I'm right here, guy. Which proceeded, like Russell Westbrook then proceeds to lose his mind. Like one of the more embarrassing things I've seen from him. And I've watched Westbrook for years. Hyper-competitive people can lose their... We've seen Luka do it. And Westbrook just kind of lost his mind, and PJ embarrassed him. Westbrook ended up getting ejected. PJ Washington ended up getting ejected, which that was not the correct call.
He only got ejected because he already had a technical. If he didn't have that first one, he would have just got...
When did he get the first tech?
I think with the Terrence Mann stuff in the first round, they called double tech. Yeah, right. Okay. So
never mind. That's
right. Yeah. Like one T is the right call. Not like that wasn't a double T ejection scenario, but he already had one, so he kind of got boofed there.
Yeah, yeah. So it's
I didn't mean to cut you off. The weird thing about Westbrook was like he was so pissed after that foul was called. There's no way he was mad that they called a foul on him.
I think he was. Man. And like Luka is capable of selling a lot of contact. Okay. We've seen Luka do that. The way Luka was spun, that is not sellable.
Yeah, like he grabbed him. He wrapped him up. But like, it wouldn't, I mean, I don't know. I didn't think the foul was that big a deal.
No.
But the reaction afterward, I was like, what are you mad about, man? I thought you were trying to do, like, I thought he was trying to, you know, I thought he was trying to foul him on purpose for whatever.
And
whatever.
It was kind of at the decision point in the game for the Clippers, because they're down by 15 or 16 at this point. But, you know, it ended up being Russell Westbrook had the first one flagrant, two technical, 1 point or less game in the NBA since Kendrick Perkins in 2005. So shout out to that Oklahoma City Thunder team back in the day. I was just really, really, you know, just surprised. I didn't think it would get that physically testy. There was Amir Coffey kind of tried to get at Luka a couple of times. And it's just, I don't understand that from those Clippers. That, you know, it's one thing when Kawhi, we remember the dunk back in, I think it was 2021, when one of them dunked all over
it was either Kawhi or Paul George.
Kawhi or Paul George, pretty sure it was Kawhi, dunked all over Maxi, and then they're all like flexing at him. Yeah. Okay. Like, Amir Coffey is a bench player and would be a really good bench player for most teams, but it's like, why are you going at Luka? What good do you think is going to happen there?
Yeah, funny enough, like, George and Hart, like, the people that are going at Luka are the not, like, you know, the backups and stuff. I guess, I mean, that's kind of their point. They're kind of instigators, I guess. That's their job, to be the dirty work guys. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, that I've never getting into guys like that, just never, like, why would you poke the bear? Like, that just never, I feel like that never works out when you're doing it to a guy like Luka, who, like, come on, like, he's been there. I know he hasn't won a title yet, but, like, between what he's done in Europe and, like, he's, that stuff doesn't faze him, you know? Like, that's
sometimes it does faze him. Let's
be clear. It's more the ref stuff, though. The stuff that's coming from the players getting into his face, like, I don't know. I feel like that almost always ends up bad for the other team. I don't know.
So, okay, we're a little more than halfway through our normal show that we do, but this is a playoff game, and that was a crazy playoff game. So I wanted to kind of walk through it. So the Mavericks ended up closing out the game 101-90. All right, halfway through the show, those of you who would like or are like supporting the show, please do me a favor. Go ahead and head down and hit the like button on the video stream here if you're on YouTube. If while you're down there and you haven't subscribed to our show, please go ahead and do so. Just also, you know, I don't love asking for this. It makes me feel a little weird. But if you guys like supporting Josh and I, we appreciate some of the people like Louis Stevens, who sent us a tip saying it's not a blowout until Dwight Powell gets hit in the face. Gotta love that. We got Brian Roby saying PJ, Lively, Gafford, and even Josh Green all making impacts in their first playoff runs. Clippers are too old, too slow, and too frail for us. Here is some beer money. Thank you very much, Brian. And then we had a tip from DTL72 for $25. Really, really thank you for that sort of support of Josh and I. We very much appreciate these sorts of things, guys. And if you're at all interested in doing that, obviously Josh and I are happy, but I don't really love asking for it. It makes me feel a little weird. All right. So, one more thing. I'm going to go ahead and insert audio ads here. Those of you who are listening on the audio stream, be sure to know that probably sometime on Saturday, I'll be posting the Mavs Party, which is our secondary live show, which you can participate in. If you are new to the show here, we go ahead and do that after just about every game, particularly playoff games, where I host a show where you guys can come up and talk just like Josh and I are talking right now. So thanks for that. All right, I'm going to insert some audio ads right now. And if you want to listen to your 1 millionth LinkedIn ad, you could do so, because that helps Josh and I actually make a little bit of daycare money. We will be right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, man. So what else would we like to talk about in this game? Because this is just, there's a lot of ways we can go. And I'm not particularly in the mood to necessarily be negative, but I do feel like it's worth pointing out that the Dallas Mavericks won a playoff game with Luka shooting 7 of 25 and Kyrie shooting 8 of 17. When are these guys going to have a plus efficiency game, or just does it not matter?
I don't know. If the defense plays like this, it might not matter, to be quite honest. I mean, and if Kawhi keeps looking like, well, I don't even know what you would call him right now. Like, he doesn't even look like, I was going to say look like a shell of his former self, but that almost seems too generous. Like, he's been so bad since he's come back. Like, if he's going to look like that and the defense is going to be this good, I mean, they can get away with it. Especially if, like, you know, if one of Luka or Kyrie can at least kind of do what Kyrie did in the second half tonight. Yeah,
just a little burst.
Right, yeah, just the burst. Burst is a great way to put it. Like, just have something like that. I mean, if you're going to get 20 steals and blocks every game, you don't need to score that many points. Like, it's just ridiculous. The starting lineup alone had 9 of the steals. Like, it's outrageous. Like, they're such a physical, big team that, I don't know. We'll see. Like, you would assume we're going to need a big, you know, Luka game where he hits like 8 of 12 from 3 or something like that. But we're in uncharted territory with this map in the Luka era Mavericks, where the defense is just so dominant that this is the team. Like, they're a defensive team. I wrote that after game 2. Like, they're a defensive team now. And I know everyone's expecting, like, oh, the offense is going to come back on track. It's going to come back on track. And, like, yeah, it needs to be a little bit better for sure. But they're going to win these games with their defense rather than their offense, I think. Like, I don't know if we're going to see a game in this playoff. Well, maybe we will. The odds are pretty good. Like, you know, like, it used to be like they had to hit their threes or they weren't going to win a game. And now it's like that just doesn't matter. Like, they just have to keep being the good defensive team that there are. Like, that's they're setting that new standard. So I don't know. Maybe they can get away with it.
I love it, and it's weird. Luka is shooting on average 13.3 three-pointers per game this series. Yeah. He's hitting 4 of them, which is still somehow 30%. It feels like he's shooting 0%, but he does. He hits just enough big ones to where it's like, what is going on here? All right, it's worth turning our attention to some of the other Mavericks. Josh Green is a much maligned player within this podcast realm. That's perfectly, you know, it's worth saying out loud. He played 25 minutes tonight. He had 8 points, 5 rebounds, 1 steal, and was exactly the right kind of energy the Dallas Mavericks needed. I don't know how to describe it, because there are times, we've just seen it over the years, where Josh Green's kind of freneticism can work to his disadvantage. But with the methodical way the Clippers play, he really shocks the Clippers. It's really quite impressive that he's this effective, because the numbers don't do justice just to what he was doing in this game, and really last game too.
Yeah, I mean, and I think what helps with this matchup is the Clippers what is their offense? They don't have an offense.
Like, yeah.
They don't run a lot of off-ball stuff. They don't run, you know, their pick and rolls are primarily with Harden. And the Mavericks aren't putting Green on Harden. So you think about the worst thing that Green is on defense, screen navigation. Like, the Clippers aren't killing him for it, because they're putting him on George or Kawhi or Terrence Mann or Amir Coffey. And he's not getting put through a ton of screens like he would if he was guarding Harden. Like, they've always got one of Derek Jones or Luka or Kyrie or someone else. So he's not getting ran into screens. So he's kind of doing that off-ball chaos role.
He also sold I mean, he got shoved off by Amir Coffey in the fourth quarter. I think it was the fourth quarter. It might have been the third quarter. And then sold a back screen that was where he popped his head back like James Harden does on a just a like it was not an illegal screen. He just sold the call. I was laughing my ass off. Like it was
good for him. Veteran move.
Something. You know? I don't.
You don't see him do that kind of veteran move, right?
Right.
You know.
So.
Yeah, and also like he had what, two offensive rebounds.
Yes.
Both of them felt like backbreakers. Like his offensive rebounds, they almost always they're not like it's a long rebound and he just happened to be there. They almost always feel like. It's a clip like someone's grabbing the ball and they think this is going to be an easy rebound and we can walk up the floor. Mm-hmm. And he's just like a battering, heat-seeking missile, like running through the ball and not giving up on the play. Mm-hmm. Like the way he doesn't give up on the play makes such a huge impact when, especially against this specific Clippers team, which is just slow as all get out and wants to walk the ball up the floor and has these older star veterans that, you know, don't want to do the dirty work.
So. I got to interrupt you. Sorry. Wade Lamb says, Kirk, you keep confusing Coffee for Norman Powell. He's probably right. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Coffee didn't score any points.
Sorry, Wade. You're right. Yeah.
No, it's okay. But yeah, it's his energy, like they're focusing his energy in the right ways, I think, without letting him get exposed for his weaknesses. And I think the Clippers are just not the kind of team that can expose him unless they want to start running him through some screens, which are on a lot of screens off ball, like because this is the Harden ISO pick and roll, high pick and roll show. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of going through the rest of the guys, Maxi Kleber once again. You know, you look at his box score, you're probably rolling your eyes, but the 16 minutes he was out there were huge. He caught and he nailed a three at a pretty clutch point, which just shooting the ball with confidence, Maxi, we've talked about this all season. When he does it, it breaks game plans.
Yes.
Maybe he's not going to get a lot of attempts this series, but I want him I want him to fire away now, which was not what I was saying, several months ago, you know, when whoever grew him a new toe, it's really something.
Yeah. Really yeah. Something. And his footwork on defense has been like, where's that? Like, I mean, it's been pretty good since the trade deadline. And it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know what happened because that was the thing we talked about with him. And it's kind of the thing we talk about with Josh, where it's like, you know, we've kind of like, he doesn't need to score. Like, where's the defense? And it wasn't there early on, but man, he looks like 2022 playoff run Maxi. Maybe he's not making as many shots, but defensively he's right there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then we got Derek Lively with his most impactful playoff performance to date. Granted, he's only had three of them in 15 minutes. He had 13 points and two boards, two blocks. And it was just the kind of, he was such a threat on offense for a short burst that it really helped pull the Mavericks ahead. He just gave a great quote in the post game, just talking about how he's been able to go to Tyson Chandler to talk about whatever. And I'm really happy for the guy. It really looks like they've gotten a special player. My friend, Jay Kyle Mann, was on Bill Simmons' podcast earlier this week, and they were talking about the Clippers series, and he talked about, and I kind of disagree with him on this, but it was an interesting conversation nonetheless, about how Lively has sort of a set limited number of things the Mavericks are comfortable with him doing at this point in his career. I think that is correct, but I also think that, you know, there just haven't been enough times this season where we have seen Lively's full skill set get unleashed. The Mavericks haven't felt the need to do so. You know, there was the big Oklahoma City comeback where he was catching the ball out of the Luka double teams and finally attacking the rim. And that was pretty fun. And there's just a lot. There's just a lot more to his game. You know, in pregame, he hit like three straight threes and people were videotaping it and talking about it. There's just a lot to be excited for the future for Derek Lively and how they bring him along. Is just so important because if he can both be useful and develop at the same time, it's that just is impossibly rare at the NBA level.
Yeah, it really is. Man, 13 points in 15 minutes for him.
There were so many dunks. Like Kyrie fed him twice, I think, where I was just like, whoa. Like, we didn't even talk about Kyrie's passing in this game. There was some incredible stuff going on.
Yeah, it's 6 assists. So, yeah, he's not a high assist guy in this Dallas offense. So they let him run a lot of pick and roll. I think they're trying to give Luka some reps to, like, rest, to catch his breath, like, in mid-game. But that was fun, too. But
another stellar, you know, like, you kind of keep going through the guys. And it's, like, obviously we talked about P.J. Washington. He was a team-high plus 23, only 10 points. He missed all of his three-pointers, but he hit 5 two-point shots, which is so important for him and the Mavericks. He obviously had 4 stocks and is now a Dallas folk hero, as he ought to be. I would recommend going to his Instagram page if you haven't, where he posted that photo of himself. I love watching guys kind of just revel in the moment. This is his first playoffs. It's pretty nice.
George and Kawhi can't get around him, by the way. Like, they just can't.
PJL is a real thing. Mm-hmm. Real thing. Pretty shocking. Then we got, you know, Derek Jones Jr., really spectacular performance, I think. Just him and Washington are such a different version of what the Mavericks had when they had two wings and Dorian Finney-Smith and Reggie Bullock. Very different.
It's like that combo on steroids.
But it's really threatening. Like, when Derek Jones Jr. is in his bag, he is living in whatever Clipper he's guarding pocket. Like, he is just so annoying to that. And it's really hard to put, you know, like, a numerical value on that sort of thing. But then his confidence is there on offense. Like, this is a guy who, when he's bad on offense, is atrocious. He only hit 1 3 tonight, but he got to the line once and hit, you know, 4 or 3 two-point shots. And it's just, I was with one of my friend's little boys, and there was a shot in the first half where he drove the lane and did the thing that Nikola Jokic is so good at, where he put the ball off the rim in a specific place where he could get the offensive rebound and just tap it right in. I mean, just really, really remarkable stuff.
Yeah, so. His shooting, you know, the Clippers aren't guarding him, but the way he's kind of working around that with attacking closeouts aggressively on the drive, or cutting off ball and finding his way to the basket. Like, he pressures the rim pretty well for a guy that has no jumper. Even though his one made three was a step back three in the corner, which was pretty wild. But it's funny, because I don't know if you're about to talk about him next, but, like, when I thought going to the playoffs, I thought the importance and impact of Jones and Exum would be switched. Like, I thought it was going to be Jones who was going to be the one that might get played off the floor a little bit, not be as effective, and Exum be the one that's closing and playing the bigger minutes. And it's been the complete opposite, because Jones's defense, like, guarding the pick and roll, has been so great, and he's just kind of within himself on offense. While Exum, I don't know what's going on with Exum. Like, his defense has still been pretty good, but he's taking some very weird shots.
He just needs to hit a three. He needs to see the ball go through the net, and I think that'll break a lot of this.
He missed all his threes. That didn't help. But he took his other shot was a two-pointer. It was like a pull-up mid-range jumper, like something he hasn't done all season. And that was when I was like, okay, like, there's something going – like, he is not comfortable, because he is doing stuff with the ball that he never did in the regular season. So they might need to park him in the corner a little bit more. I don't know. Maybe they haven't been able to utilize his passing. It's been weird. He hasn't been very effective. I don't know if it's because maybe this isn't the series for him, because Kawhi and Paul George are bigger guys, and he's 6'5". He's not as long and as athletic as Jones. So maybe that might be it. But yeah, it's just been a weird series for him.
Yeah. Well, and that it's a weird series and the Mavericks are up 2-0 can really speak to the different levels of growth that this team has. Just a lot of fun. Just a lot of fun watching this. The crowd was great. Shout out to the Mavericks fans who were there being incredibly loud, booing the Clippers. It was a lot of fun to watch that one. Quick shout out to Albert. for the tip. Really appreciate that, Albert. And Brantley as well. He said, Josh's individual defense was as good as I've seen it tonight. I agree with that. I do think that's largely because the Clippers weren't great at setting screens on him. But that's, you know, Josh has always been pretty good at staying in front of his man. He just runs into challenges with screens and overhelping. So, well, it's about 30, you know, almost 40 minutes into the show. Should we let you go to sleep and then I'll host my our secondary crazy person show with the fans you want to join?
Sure, that sounds great.
Okay, guys, this has been Kirk Henderson and Josh Bow. The Mavericks play on Sunday at 2:30, which means European fans, which means hopefully my friend from Ireland will call back. That was I've gotten like 5 emails and 2 in-person comments about the gentleman who called in from Ireland the other night saying they want him to be a regular part of the show. We'll be hanging out late talking basketball that day as well, but not as late as tonight because, again, 2:30 basketball game. Everybody who's here in the chat, stay around. Everybody who's listening on an audio stream, please be sure to check in on your podcast feed a little bit later. Josh is the man. He did all the editing, and check out everything at MavsMoneyBall.com. We will be back on Sunday. Everybody enjoy the first part of your weekend.